Fox Sports Trending now.
Week 14 is here in the National Football League, and there's a showdown between the Chiefs and Ravens in Kansas City on Sunday. Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco is going to be listed as questionable on the team's injury report because of his hip injury, but he did practice fully today. No word who's going to start against Kansas City. Chiefs wide receiver Sammy Watkins doubtful for the game with a foot injury. The Bears are getting quarterback Mitchell Trubisky back for their Sunday night affair against the Rams. He returns from a shoulder issue and is not on the team's injury report. Chargers running back Melvin Gordon is on their injury report, out for Sunday's game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Chargers have a short week heading into Week 15 as they'll take on the Chiefs on Thursday night. Jets linebacker Darren Lee has been suspended 4 games for violating the NFL's policy for substance abuse. Former Ole Miss head coach Hugh Freeze is the new head football coach at Liberty. Jeff Collins leaves Temple for Georgia Tech. I'm Dan Beyer.
It's Friday. It's Friday. We're so glad it's Friday.
This is Bullseye on Weather on AM 930. Overnight, cloudy and cold with a low near 20. Saturday, a bit of sunshine with a high of 30.
It's Bull's Eye on the Afternoon with Andy Bull Barch and Matt Douglas.
This guy's going to hurt us, Walt.
No, Donnie. These men are cowards.
On AM 930 WEOL.
Minutes after 5 o'clock, final hour of Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. He's Matt Douglas. I'm Andy Bulbart. You've got us until 6, and then you get about an hour of a break from us before Matt and I come your way again, calling some high school basketball. Coming your way 7 o'clock tonight, pregame action kicks into high gear. Lutheran West taking on Clearview. Tip time scheduled for 7:30 over at Clearview. Well, we've had a lot of fun on today's show. We talk some college football with Adam Burke at BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio in the 4 o'clock hour. And now we turn our attention back to baseball. Winter meetings, of course, next week in Sin City. And there should be a lot to talk about next week. But some pretty big Tribe news went down a week ago today. It was, I was on vacation, and I looked down at my phone. I saw a bunch of alerts pop up talking about how Yan Gomes had been traded to the Washington Nationals. A lot of people around here didn't take too kindly to the trade. And I wanted to get a more in-depth look at what's coming back to the Tribe in return. And in order to do that, we bring in Adam McInturf with 2080baseball.com. Adam, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
No, I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to begin with your general thoughts on the trade. Obviously, you know, for the Nationals, they get a pretty darn good backstop. Although, you know, at his age, I don't think it was the idea that folks here in Cleveland were mad that they lost Yan Gomes, but he's coming off an all-star season. And you know, any time you sell a guy that high, you know, you're losing quite a bit of productivity from the previous year. But, you know, from the Nationals' perspective, what was the take on this trade?
Absolutely. I think from the national side, from a pure baseball perspective, I definitely understand why Indians fans aren't really happy about this deal. You know, like you said, Yan Gomes, this is a guy that's been a big piece of the Indians for years, coming off an all-star season. He's a veteran guy. He brings a lot to the table. And I think the Nationals are going to benefit from that, certainly getting that type of piece. You know, I just think there's a little bit more to this deal than that from Cleveland's standpoint. I think it's pretty financially motivated, to be honest with you. I think they're comfortable with their in-house options. And I think to them, some of the value from this trade, though, like I said, pure baseball, I think on-field value, the Nationals probably are, in my opinion, probably getting a little bit here in this trade. But for the Indians, the value they're getting here is they're saving themselves at bare minimum $8 million. And for a team like them that's as budget conscious as they are, and for some of the other needs they have this offseason, I do kind of see why they made this trade. So I'll kind of start there and we can keep breaking it down. But that's kind of my largest takeaway when I saw this was it's reflective of Cleveland's confidence in their in-house options and, frankly, how much finances are at the front of their plate right now, but what they're trying to figure out.
And, of course, coming to the Tribe in return, the infamous player to be named later. We'll touch on that here in just a bit. But of the guys that we do know for sure who are coming to the Tribe, an outfielder and Daniel Johnson, or I guess he goes by Danny Johnson. And, of course, we've got Jeffrey Rodriguez as well, a pitcher coming back. I wanted to just get your take on, we'll start with Johnson, a guy that's a five-tool prospect, although he was riddled with injuries last year. 2017 seemed like it was a pretty darn good year for him. A guy that, and again, correct me, Adam, if I'm wrong here, a guy that seems like he does a lot of things fairly well, but it doesn't seem like he's done anything great just yet.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's a very strong characterization of Daniel Johnson as a prospect right now. Obviously, I think the Indians went into this offseason feeling as though the outfield depth is going to be an issue for them and something that they're looking to address. So, to some degree, Daniel Johnson adds a high minors controllable piece that fits that mode for them. I think the concern with him, like you said, is whether he really winds up being more of a solid fourth outfielder on a contending team like Cleveland, or whether in the long term he's an everyday player. Certainly, like you said, the potential for some of those five tools, like there's not really a weakness. I wouldn't say he really has a well below average tool, but there's not necessarily a carry tool that's a dominant strength. You know, he's an outfielder. He's played a little bit of center field, but he's more of a corner outfielder. Solid bat, although he did, you know, he struggled with injuries last year, and he did have a tough fall league, frankly. But not really enough power for a corner. So there's some concern that he might wind up a tweener, but there's a lot of things he can do to help you out. Very fast, plus athlete. Definitely some upside here. This was a guy that was the Nationals minor league player of the year in 2017. So I wouldn't look just at his 2018 stats. 2017 season was really his breakout in the national system.
And is there anything that really kind of stands out about him? I mean, he sounds like a toolsy guy, and again, the numbers don't always tell the whole story, but looking at his numbers, looks like he's pretty fast. He certainly has a little bit of pop. He's very athletic as well. You know, and in the times that you've seen him, is there anything about him that really kind of stands out to you about Johnson?
I would just say the supplementary ways he can help you win games, not necessarily even at the plate. Like, and I think that's what's going to bring value, what his absolute floor is, and it's that role player, that bench outfielder. His two best attributes are his speed and his throwing arm, so that gives you some ability to help impact the game later in games if he's coming in to pinch runner as a defensive replacement, and it certainly doesn't prevent him from playing right field or either corner outfield spot. So that's kind of what I would say about him. I think, like I said, the question long-term is going to be whether this is an everyday guy on a good team or whether this is going to be a type that settles in as a role player for the Indians moving forward.
Again, we're talking with Adam McInturf with 2080baseball.com. He's our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. I want to stick with Johnson for just another moment here before we turn our attention to Jeffrey Rodriguez. Do you think Johnson projects better at one corner outfield spot over the other? You think he's better in left as opposed to right, or does it really not matter which corner outfield position he plays? Is he that good defensively?
I think he's good enough defensively that he can move between either one. But I would lean towards right field given, like I said, one of his best attributes is his strong throwing arm. There's some people on the internet that have put a 70 grade on it on the 2080 scale. I'm not sure if I've seen a 70, but it's certainly above average, and it wouldn't shock me if it's actually better than I've seen it and someone has seen it as a 7 grade. The throwing arm is very strong. And just for people at home, the thinking there is that you want to put an outfielder with a stronger arm in right field and not left field, because you generally are seeing right fielders make throws, longer throws, to third base and to home much more than you see, obviously, left fielders throwing to first base, but certainly guys even challenging arms of left fielders on tag ups when they're on third. So right fielders make a lot more challenging throws, and that's generally why you'd want to move a guy like Johnson to right field with his arm strength.
And taking a look at those Fall Instructional League numbers, I mean, nothing to write home about, but I know a lot of folks have attributed that to, you know, he maybe was a little bit rusty because he didn't play a whole lot this year. You talked about how he was kind of riddled with injuries. And was that really the way you looked at it? I mean, was it just a tough fall league or a tough instructional league for him simply because he may have been at least a little bit rusty?
Yeah, I think that was a part of it. I also think some of the injuries specifically that he had last year, which were, I believe, with his wrist and his forearm, if I'm not mistaken, that's tough for a hitter. You hear this all the time. When hitters ding up their hands or their fingers, their wrists, anything like that, it can take time for feel and strength to come back, even if the part of the body is technically healthy. And to me, Johnson just didn't really find his groove this year. I mean, he just kind of never really found a rhythm. I don't look at his 2018 as reflective of the type of player that he is. Thankfully, I've had a fairly long track record seeing this guy since he came into the national system after being a draft pick in 2016. So I think there's a little bit more to come from this guy personally than maybe his fall league shows especially. Though I do anticipate they're going to probably stick him at Akron in Double-A to start next year and let him maybe build up some more at-bats at Double-A. So that's where he left off in the national system.
That was my next question, so you already answered that for me. I was just going to ask, where do you think he starts? And I guess to add to that, about how far away do you think he is realistically before making any kind of major league impact?
I bet, I'll say conservatively 2020, 2021, but let's stick with 2020. I feel a little bit better about 2020. I think the Indians typically, two things are true. They're very focused on player development, so they're not afraid to take their time with a guy until he is as polished as they need. I'm sure you guys have seen that over the years. And they're very conscious of service time. I know this is a hot topic issue. I actually have a little, I worked for a major league organization, so maybe I'm a little biased, but I have a little bit less animosity towards teams maybe than some of the media for being cognizant of service time. But you add both of those things up, and I feel like it's probably more likely that 2020 is the window for him, unless he really just blows the doors off and does something unforeseen in 2019. So that's kind of my take. Like I said, it seems realistic to me that he's going to Akron, which, by the way, I must say, I'm not up in your neck of the woods much, but that is one of my favorite minor league parks. Akron's absolutely beautiful. Love that stadium.
Canal Park is terrific. I remember I went to a game at Canal Park. Oh, boy, I want to say it's first or second year that it opened, and then I went back there about 4 or 5 years ago, and I was blown away by just how beautifully it has been kept up over the years. That is a terrific ballpark. You're right about that. It is gorgeous. Just a phenomenal facility, no doubt. Let's turn our attention to the pitcher that the Indians received in this trade, Jeffrey Rodriguez. Now, he actually has made some starts, and I think that the Indians plan on using him coming out of the bullpen. At least it seems that way for now. There are certainly a lot of things that can change. What's in the arsenal for Jeffrey Rodriguez?
Definitely, and I'm glad you mentioned that they're thinking about moving into the bullpen. As I'm guessing you guys know, and as Indians fans should know, Cleveland is top-notch at maximizing value with pitchers. Their analytics department is excellent in terms of the understanding how they know how to put some of the advanced mechanisms that teams have at their disposal today into play. So I fully expect they're going to take a guy like Jeffrey Rodriguez, who's a young kid with good stuff and bad stats, frankly, and they're going to find value from him. Again, this is a guy where I know that they're, you know, fans at home that look at his stat line, they're not going to be happy by what they saw last year. But there are a lot of variables that came into play about why he was in the big leagues at all. I think this is who the Nationals had to rush because they were very short on starting pitching depth last year from an injury standpoint. And his stuff and his talent is quite a bit above his stats. You know, it starts with a mid to high 90s fastball. The average 95, 96 miles an hour in his fastball. And he's got a good hard slider as his go-to secondary pitch. Those are things that bode well for the bullpen. And I think that's what Cleveland is looking at for him, at least initially.
Certainly. That's an area that was a strength a few years ago, and now all of a sudden, I don't want to say that it's become a weakness, but it's not necessarily one of the things when you look at this team on paper, you think, boy, that's a great bullpen. It certainly needs some work. So when that deal was made, we certainly thought that's exactly where they were going to put him. Now, as far as I understand it, too, Adam, he's got a pretty electric fastball, but command was a little bit of a problem for him.
Yeah, command is the issue, and I think that is long-term maybe why some people see him being a better fit in relief. His stuff was excellent. It's just that sometimes when you're a starter and you struggle to throw strikes, and no matter how good your fastball is, when you're consistently behind in counts and guys know that you need to try and come back over the plate with a fastball because you're falling behind 1-0, 2-0, 2-1 consistently. It doesn't really matter how hard you throw. These big league hitters are so good, they're going to hit it. But sometimes guys like him can go to the bullpen and just kind of air it out, and the quality of their raw stuff, without having to worry about managing pitch counts and working back to the lineup or showing guys different speed the first and second time up, it can just kind of click. And guys should just kind of not worry too much, just throw. And that's why we've seen over the years, we've seen so many successful starter or reliever conversions because guys' stuff just translates. I think that's what the hope is for Rodriguez. But there's something that I want to actually kick back to you guys. This is something that I thought about. Everyone's talked about the Indians this year wanted to move from their surplus of starting pitching depth. And while I do see Jeff Rodriguez being a good bullpen fit, I think something that added a little bit of value for this player specifically in the Indians' mind was that he does have at least some experience starting games. And if the plan still is to trade away from that depth that they have in their rotation, this is a guy that can at least eat some innings if the plan changes sometime this offseason. He's a flexible piece that can move into the rotation, perhaps. So there's been a lot of talk about them not being done and trading starting pitching. And sometimes I look at a move like this at the start of the offseason, and I wonder, how is this connected maybe to the next move?
Sure.
So going into the winter meeting, definitely curious what Cleveland's doing in that respect.
We're very curious as well because we've heard a lot of rumors in recent weeks, and we're awfully intrigued by what they might do next week when they go to Las Vegas. And not every deal gets done in Vegas, but I really believe that a lot of those trade discussions, they at least begin or they start to formulate when you're at the winter meeting. So we don't, we don't know if it's going to be Bauer or if it's going to be Kluber, but boy, I would say if you're asking for a percentage, it seems like an 80% chance that one of those guys will be moved. If not before next week, it seems like in the foreseeable future. But it's going to be very, very interesting for us to see what happens with that rotation moving forward.
No doubt.
Got to ask you about the infamous player to be named later in this Yan Gomes deal, because, you know, sometimes the player to be named later could be totally inconsequential. And for us Indians fans, sometimes that player to be named later may end up being a Michael Brantley. So you just never know what you're going to get. Who are some of the names that you guys have heard rumored to be that player to be named later in this deal?
Yeah, we've done some digging and we have not haven't come up with any hard names, certainly. But this should also be totally wrong because there's just so many ways player to be named later can go. But I've heard that it is a young Dominican starting pitching prospect. I don't know the validity to that whatsoever, but certainly the Nationals are a team in the last few years has really upped their Latin American scouting and operations. And they've started to accrue a good amount of kind of under the radar, interesting, 17 to 20 year old Hispanic players low on their minor league system. And it really wouldn't surprise me. The Indians do such a great job scouting and developing players. If they've had scouts all over the low parts of the national system preparing for a scenario like this, in which they're choosing from a small list of players low in the system, and they're taking a gamble on a lottery ticket, really, on the back end of this deal.
Very good stuff. Well, Adam, we appreciate the time. This was a heck of a lot of fun getting into the nuts and bolts of this trade between the Tribe and the Washington Nationals. Do you get a chance to go down to Las Vegas next week, or are you going to observe from afar?
No, I will be observing from up close. I will be in Sin City and enjoying it as always. Great time of year. It's always a ton of fun.
Very good stuff. Well, if you're a baseball fan, you need to give Adam a follow on Twitter at 2080Adam. Very simple, at 2080Adam. And you can also check out 2080baseball.com for more information. That's 2080baseball.com. Adam, again, thank you very much for the time. Safe travels to Las Vegas next week, and we'll have you on again soon.
Yep, thanks so much. I appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you. You too. Again, Adam McInturf with 2080baseball.com joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon, breaking down that Yan Gomes trade with the Tribe, getting Daniel Johnson and Jeffrey Rodriguez back in return, and of course, that player to be named later. Time for a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt Douglas and I have a half hour left on this Friday edition. We will return right after this here on AM 930 WEOL.
Every Thursday evening at 6, join WEOL's Tim Alcorn and Sean Bennett from the Chronicle Telegram for the Cobos Insurance Center High School Wrestling Show, presented by Century 21 Deanna Realty. That's Thursdays at 6 on AM 9.